Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Hey, it's Phil Hendry, and it is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Truth is our bitch. Welcome to the show. This evening we have with us, of course, Margaret Gray. We have Robert Leonard. We have with us Bud Dickman. And tonight we'll also be...
Hey, man, you want some water?
No, I'm okay. I wasn't actually coughing so much as just going too fast. In fact, somebody asked me the other day, do your thoughts go faster than your mouth? Or does your mouth go slower than your thoughts? Is there something, you know what I mean?
Uh-oh.
Margaret, are you familiar with this?
Well, it's a neurological test.
It's a neurological test, that's right. I had a neurological test once years ago because I'm crazy. No, I'm kidding. I actually had a neurological test years ago because I was having a hard time. I've had insomnia my entire life. And when I tell people about the insomnia problems I have, they look at me like I just landed from the planet Venus.
Yeah, but it's pretty weird.
Well,
you've talked about the sleep paralysis, which I think is absolutely fascinating. And at the same time, and this, I'll only use this word this time, but so retarded.
Yeah.
What do you mean retarded?
Well, didn't you say you threw yourself out of bed?
I threw myself.
Yeah, gotta find out whether he's gonna wake up.
He was doing that to find out if he'd wake up, but you flung yourself from your bed. So let me ask you, Phil.
I didn't fling myself from my bed.
Let me ask you, if you were in a third floor apartment, let's say, would you just throw yourself from the balcony to see if gravity worked? I don't understand.
I know gravity works.
Then why did you do that?
I did that. We're getting way ahead of ourselves here. Sleep paralysis is this thing that many people listening have it, and it's a terrible thing to have. When I was talking to some friends of mine about it last week, I was talking to Darren and the guys. We were doing a rehearsal on our one-man show, and we took a break, and I was talking to them about this, and they were sitting there with their jaws open, just, what? What is that? I said, well, sleep paralysis is when you wake up, you think you've awakened, but you're in a half-awake, half-sleep state. So it's sort of a twilight sleep. You are still dreaming to some degree, but you're awake enough to sense that your body is there, you're in a bed. The room around you is the room, but you're still sleeping, so things are different. It's really out there. It's like the cabinets of Dr. Caligari in a way,
What's that?
What's that? The cabinet of what?
The Cabinets of Dr. Caligari. It was an early 1920s made-in-Germany film. It's a fascinating film from the standpoint of... Margaret, you know about the...
Yes, it's the German Impressionistic School of Filmmaking, and I believe the director was... hold on.
Was it that guy Fritz Lang?
No, it wasn't. Don't let him... I'm the film person.
Well, was it Fritz Lang?
No, it wasn't Fritz Lang. It was Fritz... It was some...
She said Kraut.
I did. I said some Kraut name.
All right. Forget that I asked, okay? Thank you, Robert.
You are a real rat. You know that?
Well, you did. You said some Kraut name.
I said some Kraut... No, I didn't say some Kraut.
All right. Well, you take it easy with that some Kraut. The fact is, the Germans in the 20s were quite an interesting... A group of filmmakers, the Cabinets of Dr. Caligari being one of them. But in this film, one of the characters is schizophrenic. So the director, forgive me, I don't know his name, the director built sets that were off angle. And it, in other words, was to give us the view through the eyes of a schizophrenic, what the world looks like. Oftentimes, people that are psychotic or schizophrenic have a heart. Their reality's fractured, so even the street is not level. As they walk down the street, it's sideways, and faces are different. It's a terrible, terrible disease, and thank God we're starting to get a handle on it.
But the Cabinet of Caligari...
What about the Cabinet of Caligari?
Well, ain't they gonna make a movie like that?
They'll not make a film like the Cabinet of Caligari again.
Thank you.
Oh, don't be sarcastic, Phil.
Well, I mean, you're making this speech.
In what way?
They'll not make a film like the Cabinet of Caligari. The Cabinets of Dr. Caligari.
That's Italian.
So?
You said it was German.
Well, what difference? difference does it make, man? Don't you think they got Italian doctors in Germany?
Well, no, I understand the confusion, but the Italians did ally themselves with the Germans later on.
What do you mean, ally? No, like lie down.
Not lie down.
The Germans and the Italians had a political alliance in World War II, yes. What's that got to do with an Italian doctor working in Germany?
Well, maybe it was shot in Rome.
Yeah.
A German film shot in Rome? I don't know. You know what we ought to do? Just so that we can really waste a lot of time, let's find out where Caligari, who is the hero of the cabinets of Dr. Caligari, was he Italian? Was he a German with just an Italian? I know. Maybe he was from Switzerland.
What's that about?
Switzerland's got a lot of Italian names. They've got a lot of German-type Italian. They got cats like Ludwig Robicelli. Have you ever heard of these guys from Argentina?
What does that mean, these guys from Argentina?
Have you heard of...
But it's, yeah, Argentina I heard of.
Yeah, everybody heard about that.
I'm not talking about Argentina. When I was a kid, I used to follow auto racing, and I don't follow it as much as I do now, but I used to love the International Grand Prix auto racing circuit, and the Argentinians had a guy, Carlos Reutemann. You know that name?
No, I don't.
Carlos Reutemann. That means that's a guy from Argentina with a German last name.
Is that German?
Yes. Just take it from me. It's German. How is it you guys know Italian, but you don't know German?
I don't speak Italian. The man said that when he...
Will you never mind? So Carlos Reutemann was a part of the expatriate. He was the son of, I would imagine, the expatriate Germans that went to Argentina, shall we say, for a new reality.
Yes, I take your meaning, Mr. Hendry.
What are you talking about? With a wink, wink, and a nudge, nudge.
Never mind about it. You're too young.
Yeah, bud, just... So,
what?
Never mind.
Yeah, bud, you wouldn't understand.
Yeah. Carlos Reutemann, you don't want to know about.
You guys are keeping stuff from me, and it's makes me feel inferior.
You are inferior.
All right, bud, I'll tell you. I just was joking around. The Germans after World War II went to Argentina, a lot of them.
Oh, yeah, to hide out because they were war crimes.
Exactly. Not all of them, though. But not everybody was a war criminal that went to Argentina. Some of them were Germans that just wanted to split because they believed in National Socialism. And they didn't want to live in a country that was divided between the West and the East. They didn't want to live in a country that was either run by the Soviets or by the Western powers. So a lot of Germans split. And a lot of them went to South America. There's a huge expatriate community that was established there. And to this day, you will find a great many German surnames amidst the Argentinian population. Doesn't mean they were war criminals, although they were...
They were Nazis.
They were Nazis, okay?
I like Nazi.
Yeah, I like Nazi, too, because it gives a... It shows the... It makes it...
Yeah, go ahead. I'm following.
Well, you guys are not talking to each other. I'm on the air right now. So anyway, the cabinets of Dr. Caligari, because of how crazy people... Ah, I know, I was talking about how psycho I am. So anyway, oh yes, sleep paralysis. How the hell did we get to Argentina?
Well, there's a lot of ways... What are you talking about?
A lot of ways you get there.
I'm not talking about by plane or by boat.
I'm sorry, Mr. Henry, I know we're confusing you, but you said for us to shut up, too.
I did, thank you, bud, for acknowledging that.
Well, you don't tell me to shut up, do you?
Yes, I do, sometimes. So the sleep paralysis thing was the result of me saying something about something, I forget what. All right. Yeah, no, anyway, sleep paralysis is very scary, and so I threw myself out of bed one night because I wanted to test a theory that had been discussed with me by my doctor at the time, good old Doc Gans in Beverly Hills, California. Great guy, very funny guy. In fact, Dr. Gans was the guy who said to me, "Do you mind, Phil, if I write down for the insurance, because when you go to the doctor, they have to write down what the diagnosis is, what is the, what did you diagnose the patient with, what did you treat the patient for? This is for insurance purposes." He said, "Would you mind if I write down lycanthropia, which is the, you know, man thinking he's turning into a wolf?" I said, "No, not at all. Go ahead." I don't think he did, because obviously that probably would have...
That's the end of your insurance.
Yeah, they pay that one bill and then...
Then they wouldn't insure me, exactly. I wouldn't blame them either. "Hey, Bob, we've got a guy here with lycanthropia. Forget it, you know." So he was a funny guy. He said to me, "I believe, and this is just my feeling, that the idea of sleep paralysis is psychological." He says, "I think that there's a psychological thing happening with sleep paralysis." And I said, "Really?" He said, "Yes." He said, I think that if I had a bunch of people in a room that I was able to induce into having sleep paralysis, and there's ideas as to why it happens, maybe too much alcohol consumption on any given night, too much caffeine consumption on any given night, things like that. He said, what I'd like to do then is have them with the sleep paralysis, and then I'd set fire to the room and see if they all woke up, because the self-preservation instinct taking over, you would bust through whatever psychological barrier had created the sleep paralysis. You'd save yourself, you'd get up, and you'd run. So I thought, that's kind of interesting. So that's, is it physical or is it psychological? Yes. He says, I think it's psychological. So I said, all right. So I went home and thought about that. Well, years later, I'm in bed one night, and I get this sleep paralysis, and I thought, aha, I'll test Dr. Ganz's theory, because you're that conscious.
So let me get this right. You're half dreaming, but you can also...
You can sort of think. You know that you have this thing, and you know, oh, God, man, I hate this, and you know that you're sleeping. Yeah. So what I did was, you can move yourself when you have sleep paralysis enough. You can roll over, and I did. And I rolled over, and I threw myself off of the bed.
What, so you wake up?
To see if I'd wake up. Because if I'm falling out of the bed, I'm going to wake up, and I'm going to break my fall, aren't I? So I rolled out of the bed, and I did not break my fall. And I remember I hit my head on the dresser.
What an idiot.
Wait a second.
Well, what a stupid thing to do, Phil. You could have been very badly hurt.
Hold on. So I hit the floor, and I woke up then. I damn sure woke up then. Now, I thought about that, and I thought, okay, that's physical. And then I thought about it later. I thought, wait a minute. Wait a second. If it was physical, why did I wake up, if you will, or lose the sleep paralysis when I hit the floor? In other words, just because you hit the floor doesn't mean you're necessarily going to relieve yourself of this sleep paralysis. You'll wake up. But why wouldn't you still be paralyzed?
Because it's not sleep paralysis no more.
It's not sleep paralysis anymore. But what is it about the sleeping state that would cause a physical paralysis? If you have a physical paralysis, you have a physical paralysis. You know?
Phil, you're not a doctor.
You're right. Anyway, I'm thinking too much about it. All right, we'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show. Steve Bozell on the end of the world, on doomsday, on the Mayan thing, on the Mayan, you know, oh, those Mayans. As Tammy Wynette said, stand by your
Mayan.
Right, we'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Listen.
Give him all your
God,
love.
Tammy Wynette, bless her heart.
Hold on. What about this song?
This is where they predict. God, predict
the Mayan doomsday.
They predict the Mayan doomsday.
Yeah, listen. This was the backward basking that I heard. I tried to tell people, and I tried to tell people.
Understand. What's he talking about?
Listen, here it is.
Here it is, right here.
But if you
yeah.
love
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought they were coming up on it.
Will you get out of here with his song?
No, I swear to God, Phil, listen.
Where's Mr. Bozell?
He's holding right now. Do you want me to man the phones while these two jackasses...
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind.
Ms. Gray, you're missing out. It's right here.
It ain't that I don't like the song. I love the song.
Yeah. Well, hold on to your hat, because it's here... In the,
yeah, hold on, keep your shirt on.
Yeah, hold on to your hat and keep your shirt on.
Okay, I got my hat and my shirt.
Right here.
Stand by your man.
See, stand by your Mayan.
Get out of here.
Are you two jackballs trying to tell me that what she didn't say Mayan?
Yes, she did. She's all hillbilly.
A cold and lonely.
All right, if she's not... She says man. She doesn't say Mayan.
Thought she did.
So this was the backward masking you wanted to tell me about. By the way, Bud, backward...
It's all right, Mr. Henry. Do you want a, how about electroshock?
Get out of here. Backward masking is backward masking. It ain't frontward singing.
What?
Stand by and burn.
No, that ain't Mayan. All right, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445, the world-famous Phil Hen Show. Now, we have Stephen Bozell with us. Mr. Bozell is the father of two. He is a construction contractor in Corona, California, a responsible citizen, a good man. We've had Steve on our show before. He's a guy that has spoken to us about a lot of stuff, Steve, and you're a good guy. I know that you have taken a lot of heat in the past because you're also very much an activist citizen. Would you call yourself an activist?
Well, you know, I don't think I've ever thought of myself as an activist, Mr. Henry. I think of myself as, I think what you said there, as a father and as a mother.
Sorry, I thought that was Stand By the Mayan.
I don't want to hear that anymore, okay?
Not yet. By the way, could I just say, as a long-time country music fan, I come from Tennessee, and that is the home of great American country music, you know, Phil, in Nashville. To the gentleman there that played Stand By Your Man, that is a classic song. And I can understand, certainly, you wanting to have a little bit of fun, but Tammy Wynette is no longer with us. She's a great singer.
Absolutely.
And a great artist, and I don't think you should mock her that way.
Yeah, but, sir, she's been dead a long time.
I understand she's been dead a long time, but as a great artist and singer and...
Tammy Wynette was great. There's no question about it. I think that the point that Bud was trying to make, he misunderstood.
Well, I think I don't hear it, and you didn't hear it either, but because I do come from that part of the world, I guess if you say she said the word Mayan, and I know people make fun of how we talk, but I didn't hear it.
No, I didn't hear it either. I heard her say, stand by your man.
No. Sorry. I heard Mayan.
Okay, that's great.
You know, I Mr. Bozell, my name is Margaret Gray. I'm a professional singer. Or I have been.
Yes, ma'am.
And I, too, echo your thoughts and your feelings. Tammy Wynette was a great inspiration to me, and I loved the song she did. Do you remember, Phil, from Five Easy Pieces? Our D-I-V-O-R-C. You remember that?
Yes, I do. Our D-I-V-O-R-C-E became final today.
Yeah, the song about divorce.
Okay, I'm... the D-I-V-O, now I'm getting nervous.
All right, well, in any event, let's not talk about Tammy Wynette. We're on here to talk about the Mayan doomsday predictions. You have talked with your attorney, Dolores Blazengame, in conjunction with two other, I think, attorneys and plaintiffs in the San Luis Obispo area?
Well, it's the Central Coast, I'm not exactly sure, but there were two other people that I was put in contact with. So it's to sort of consolidate our efforts, Phil. And it's simply this. It's I understand and everyone understood that the Mayan doomsday prediction was certainly not to be taken seriously. It was something that was blown way out of proportion. It was misinterpreted. There was no doomsday prediction there. It was simply a calendar, a Mayan calendar that someone read and someone took. And I think it's probably an internet hoax, if you will. So that was something that we would never, ever take seriously in a million years. The reason why we are, contemplating a lawsuit against the Mexican government and also against the United States government as well is that even though we knew that the Mayan prediction of doom and the end of the world was not real, it did still cause us to have anxiety to the point where at the last minute, better to be safe than sorry kicked in. And better to be safe than sorry is a longstanding American ethic, if you will, whereby you know that you probably don't need to do something, but you do it anyway. And that's all right in instances where one might think, anything can happen. But in the case of a doomsday scenario, where the Mayan culture is supposedly predicted for well into the future, the end of the world, and better than safe than sorry kicks in. Now you begin to now there's a question of manipulation of mental health, and certainly a question of the control that another being or body or culture or country has over you. Years ago.
Well, hold on for a minute, Steve. I got to take a break here.
Yes, sir.
We'll be right back. Stephen Bozell on the doomsday, Mayan doomsday that never was, that never is, that just wasn't, that didn't happen. And that Tammy Wynette wasn't singing about either.
John, stand by your Mayan.
No, not stand by your Mayan. We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445, and we're talking with our very good friend here, Stephen Bozell, about the Mayan doomsday prophecy and the fact that it didn't happen. We're going to be joined by Jay Santos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police to find out from him. There's a little bit of a connection there in terms of Mr. Santos and Mr. Bozell and that they consulted, but also I know that Jay Santos had his Citizens Auxiliary Police officers deployed in such a way. And Jay, are you there?
I'm right here, yeah.
All right. Now, Steve, I want to talk to you. All of this seems really silly to a lot of people. Did it seem silly to you, Jay?
Absolutely. You say to yourself, well, you know, I can't let my own personal opinion affect my professional judgment. If there is a need to, go into any community, go into a shopping mall, or go into a place of business or restaurants, and we have to, see to,
public safety.
I'm sorry?
See to this is Margaret Gray, public safety.
Yes, Ms. Gray, exactly, public safety. That's what you have to do. I've got some residual, and that's why I consulted with Mr. Bozell. Yes, sir.
Okay, now what is residual?
Do you want to tell him, Steve?
Residual, Mr. Hendry, from the standpoint of what I was talking about, is that while my mind can grasp the fact that the Mayan doomsday prophecy was nothing more than a lot of internet chatter and was not to be taken seriously, there is what I've identified as residual. Now, I'm not a psychologist. But it can be a physical flux, and that's what I noticed in myself. And I think, Mr. Santos, if I could
call that Brigadier Admiral.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, if you could address him as Brigadier Admiral, that's his...
I apologize.
That's quite all right, but that's the rank that I've earned, and I remember Ms. Boxer at the United States Senate of the United States was saying that she's Senate, and she wants to be called that.
Right, I understand. All right, we don't want to be contentious.
No, I'm not being contentious. I just did something I've learned.
I apologize, sir. So you're a Brigadier Admiral.
That is correct.
All right, sir. The residual that I heard you have just a moment there was that I heard you say it was a glottal glitch.
Now, if I could just anticipate what you guys are talking about, is the residual a psychological problem that causes a physical reaction?
I would say that's correct, wouldn't you, Steve?
Yes, sir. It's a psychological reaction to the fear or the anxiety you have about the Mayan doomsday that manifests itself. Again, I want to make very, very clear to your audience, no, I did not believe there was going to be a doomsday. No, I did not believe there's going to be an end of the world. No, I did not believe that there was an end of days.
And that's something else, Phil. As a member of Citizens Auxiliary Police, we would hear people talking about end of days. And these were religious people, and I would say to them, if you want to talk about the end of the world or the end of time, then you can talk about it in those terms. When you say end of days, you are talking in a religious sense. You assume a sort of public persona that you don't deserve. You think you're walking around wearing some kind of a hood. Those are the things that we were trying to keep people from doing.
What does that mean, walking around wearing a hood?
Well, I think that if you're going end of days, then people, you think you're some kind of a druid priest. And I think that sends the wrong message to people who may be on the edge of having a residual.
All right. We're using a lot of terms here. And, Margaret, I know you have some questions. Bud?
Yeah, I wanted to...
Well, excuse me. Don't I ask before he does?
Yeah, let Margaret ask, and then you.
Well, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I'm sorry, Bud.
Thank you, Mark. Go ahead, Bud.
Thank you. I want to ask from the standpoint of a residual. This is Bud Dickman, by the way.
Yes, sir. How you doing, Bud? It's Jay Santos.
Yes, sir. Okay. When you got up this morning, did you have, were you aware that the world was here?
Of course I was.
No, we're not talking about guys that aren't aware that the world ended. They're talking about a physical...
No, I understand it, Mr. Henry. Just allow me to ask my question in my own way, sir.
Yes, sir. Sorry, sir.
Wow.
Yeah, well, you know, don't get between a dog and his meat. And that's what she said. And
will you come on and ask your question?
Sorry. What I wanted to ask was simple. What is the residual effect? I'll let it go at that. Go ahead. Your witness.
What do you mean, your witness?
I think he thinks he's on a... What was the show that Andy Williams, the one that just died and he was on the TV show?
Andy Williams?
I think you may be talking about Andy Griffith, who I love very much. Matlock?
Matlock. I think you think you're on Matlock.
No, I don't think I think I'm on Matlock. I think I'm in here.
In any event, so we have... What is the residual?
The residual is when... I just told you. I'll take it from here. This Brigadier Admiral Santos will share it.
Go ahead.
Can we dispense with the title? I think it takes up too much time.
Let me host the show.
I just thought you could dispense with your title.
Ma'am, as I said, ma'am, quoting Barbara Boxner...
And her name is Boxer, not Boxner?
I apologize, but quoting Miss Boxer... you know, I worked long time and hard time to be Brigadier Admiral. And I... you know, that's something I want to be.
Well, you are a Brigadier Admiral. It's just taking a long time.
You know what's taking more time? Talking about us taking up the time. Let's just do it.
Fine.
Thank you, Mr. Henry. The residual is when you feel, I'm a modern man, you're a modern man, we're all modern men. Miss Gray is a modern woman. So we know that there's no doomsday scenario. And yet, deep in the recesses, in the shadows and the windmills of our mind, or whatever they call it, I'm sorry, I was thinking of the song.
That's accurate.
Deep in the windmills of our mind, okay.
Well, I'm just saying, way back in the recess, and way back in the shadow of your smile or something, you go back and...
What does it mean, shadow of your smile? What's the matter?
I'm going to lose it, okay?
Phil, I understand. Let's just move on. I'm asking too many questions.
Well, she said shadow of the smile.
Never mind, will you?
I apologize, Mr. Rand. I'm a little bit nervous. I'm using terms I shouldn't use. Way back in our mind...
Let's say way back in our... the older part of our brain, in the superstitious part of our brain.
That's a very good way of putting it. In a superstition... we do have a little doubt. And I think when it came to the Mayan doomsday, the doubt we had was, yes, of course, it's the world is not going to end. This is a silly, ridiculous notion. And yet, in the windmill of my mind, I'm still sort of afraid of it. And so...
Yeah, right. Can I just...
Go ahead.
So you, at the last possible moment... at the last possible moment, even though you know, back as Jay said in the windmill...
Never mind about the windmill of your... back in our superstitious brain.
All right, back in our superstitious brain, we think maybe something will. And so if we're talking to people, we'll say, no, I don't think there's going to be a... And I recorded what Jay said to play it back for you.
This call to residual. Go ahead.
December 21st, 2012, Jay Santos on the windmill of his mind.
And so I don't believe that there's such a thing as doomsday.
Okay, that I heard...
Yeah, you heard what we call a residual. It was a glottal hitch.
What that does is it betrays emotion and fear.
All right, so what is the lawsuit then?
The lawsuit, Mr. Henry, through Dolores Blazingame and associated attorneys in the Central Coast of California and any other attorneys anywhere else in the country that want to join, is a lawsuit against the Mexican government because their tourist board, in promoting the Mayan calendar,
and promoting this sort of, and by de facto and default, and the day, you know, the day, you know, doomsday, however, by default, de facto doomsday, they promoted the Mayan doomsday to the point where they were not clear. This is not a doomsday. This is a Mayan calendar. And at the very end of it, when I did more reading, I found out that what the Mayans were talking about was not the end of time, but it was the end of a certain era of civilization, and a whole new era is beginning. Now, it's not unlike the dawning of the Age of Aquarius.
That's exactly right, Phil. I remember reading that.
Right. So, in other words, this is not a doomsday scenario. It was the ending of one era of human life and the beginning of another.
That is exactly correct, Mr. Henry, and that was not made clear. As a result, you have people who should feel actually warmed or good by the new era of human life on this planet as portended by the Mayans, but instead, I had residual, Mr. Bozell's had a residual too.
Do you have any example of your own residual, Mr. Bozell?
Yes, I do. This is a recording last night from an interview I did with Jeffrey Barnes, I think, on cable in Boise, Idaho. It was a radio interview. It's on 2010, is that? And I did. So what did they say? Well, they said that I was foolish to not believe in it. And of course, Jeffrey, I don't believe in the Mayan. What's happening to you now? It's a residual. Cover 20. There you go, Mr. Henry. All right, well, you know,
Mr. Henry, I understand it sounds funny, and you may get your jollies, you won't get your cookie, and I understand all that, but...
Excuse me, we're not getting our cookies here so much as we think it's funny.
Yeah, it's pretty funny to hear you go, yee, yee.
All right, I don't need that. You understand that that this can be something that is a lifelong affliction, and something that can stay with a man for a long time.
That's what we're talking about, and that's why we are attempting, Mr. Henry, to have our attorneys address it on that level.
I'm sorry, on what?
We're attempting to have our attorneys address it on that level. I'm sorry.
On that level?
Yes, that's a Pennsylvania act. I know, I understand. You've got a little bit of a Western Pennsylvania and Baltimore accent.
That's correct. I come originally from Western Pennsylvania. I come from Beaver Falls, if you know where that is.
You come from Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania?
Yes, sir. That's Joe Namath country.
Oh, that's the hometown of Joe Namath.
Well, isn't that wonderful? Whatever.
Maybe whatever. That's Joe Namath. I'd never seen him or anything, but...
Joe Namath was like one of my favorite quarterbacks growing up.
Well, that's where I'm from, Mr. Henry, the home of Joe Namath. And we do have a tendency to swallow rattles out there, so...
All right. We're going to be back here with Jay Sanos and Stephen Bozell on a lawsuit that they are contemplating against the Mexican government for promoting the Mayan prophecy, the Mayan calendar... And not emphasizing that it isn't doomsday, it was just the ending of one era and the beginning of another. That was what this Mayan calendar represented. And much like in modern astrology, the dawning of the Age of Aquarius, if we could put it into those terms. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch.
Age of Aquarius, you
the
never heard
Phil
of that?
Phil Henry no. Show.
It's a song. This is the dawning of the Age of Aquarius.
Oh, God.
Hey, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Our number 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We're online at philhenryshow.com. Now, Margaret, you mentioned, and with us, by the way, is Stephen Bozell and Jay Sanos, the Citizens Auxiliary Police. Mr. Bozell is a private citizen, a construction contractor in Corona, California. Margaret had mentioned, guys, the Age of Aquarius. And I'll ask you, Stephen, is that essentially what we're talking about when we talk about the Mayan calendar?
I think so, Mr. Henry. I think what you have there is the Mayan calendar is in its own way, in the Mayan way, in the way of the Mayan, was saying that there's a whole new, you know, time that has been ushered in by, you know, the ending of one of era and the beginning of another. So it had nothing to do with the world ending. It had to do with the one era ending and the new one beginning.
Yeah, again, Phil, this is Jay Sanos, the Brigadier Admiral.
Yes, sir.
Which I would appreciate again. I don't know if
Yeah, I'm sorry, Brigadier Admiral. I should say that he did say during a break to please.
I apologize, Brigadier Admiral. I didn't talk to Bud.
All right. So if Mr. Roselle could hand it off to me one more time.
I'm sorry?
If you could hand it off to me one more time using my rank.
Oh, yeah, okay. And so I don't know where I left off.
Just...
What are you guys doing?
Here's Brigadier Admiral Jay Santos.
Thank you very much. We're fine, Mr. Henry. So in other words, the dawning of the age of the aquarium or something.
It's the dawning of the age of Aquarius. I have the song, if I could, Mr. Santai. I don't mean to be rude.
Well, my name is Santos for starters, so that carved out a brand spanking new ass. And
all right, let's not be petty about names and ranks, if you don't mind. I'm sorry to raise my voice.
My God.
I'm sorry to raise my voice. Let's not be petty about names and ranks. And by the same token, get the man's name right. I think his name is Santos, and I think the gentleman deserves to have it.
I appreciate that, sir.
And my apologies, sir. Mr. Santos.
No, it's Brigadier Admiral.
Brigadier Admiral Santos. The age of Aquarius, as you know, and you can sort of fade down the... Because I'm going to do something here.
Fade down what?
Fade down their... Gentlemen, excuse me, let me get...
Don't grab that, Margaret.
Well, he's not doing it.
Don't manipulate the board. Bud will do that. Now these tell these guys they're on hold.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, you guys are on hold right now if you haven't figured it out yet because no one's paying any attention to what you're saying. Yes, sir. No, Mr. Santos, stop talking. I mean, Brigadier Admiral...
Do it. Let me have the phone. Yes, sir, we'll be with you in a minute. Huh? We'll be with you in a minute, sir. Margaret's going to sing... He's going to sing this song. I don't know what that was. It sounded like, what the hell?
Yeah, this is it. This is the age of Aquarius. And, it goes like this.
Yeah?
Hold on. Hold your horses.
Keep your shirt on.
Yeah, keep your hat on. Well, I mean, take your hat. Get out of here with that. What is this?
Mr. Henry, I was about to sing this is the dawning of Aquarium.
The dawning of Aquarium, huh? Put these poor... I apologize, gentlemen. That was very rude. Now...
I don't understand what's happening. I heard Ms. Santos, Ms. Gray say... My name is Santos. Ms. Gray was going to say...
Ms. Gray was going to sing the song The Age of Aquarius, but I still haven't heard the song yet, so I don't know what the hell it is she's doing.
I thought that this song had the lyrics to it, but I guess I'm wrong.
No, it does not have the lyrics to it. All right, so you'll have to set that up some other way. Thanks a lot. That's...
I'm sorry.
Well, could I continue then?
Go ahead, sir.
What I was going to say is, Mr. Henry, the residual is something that, while is not... It's not anything I don't think that you have to worry about, but it is something that I think people who took the, seriousness of this, and then you put it together with how serious everything is, and then you, I forgot what I was going to say. I'm sorry.
Okay, Margaret.
Caterwauling. What is this?
This is a song.
I'm singing the song, for God's sake, not her. What are you doing?
I turn that crap off. Where am I?
Guys, I'm about to hang up.
No, I apologize, sir. What happened was that we were going to do The Age of Aquarius and the lyrics we've...
Let me say something. I want to wrap up here because I got to go. I've got my wife and my kids. My kids want me to say prayers with them. It's getting late. And I've wasted enough time with you people. And
well, I'm sorry you feel you've wasted time, sir.
Well, I have. I mean, I'm listening to... in any event, the glitch that I had, my own personal glitch is not the same as Jay Santos. My residual is where I can't say certain words. Mr. Santos, he had a glottal glitch. And I can remember very, very clearly when I was a little kid seeing a man staggering down the street with a knife sticking out of his head. Now, that was the result of his wife trying to kill him. And the knife in his head didn't bother me so much, but he was going, he was talking like a tard. And, and I can recall very vividly when I was on Jeff Barnes' show last night, and I said, and I had a hard time saying, you know, I'm trying to say it now. And,
what can't you say?
I'm trying to say the word buying, but every now and again.
Get to residual.
You get.
Okay.
Yeah. So I couldn't say it.
All right, so let's move on to Jay Santos.
What's wrong?
The guy staggering down the road with a knife in his head, that.
I know the story you're talking about. I seem to recall that. But, yeah, when I was talking to earlier to your producer, Mr. Henry, I said that my residual is simply a hitch, a glottal hitch, which I did play for you. Mr. Bozell, forget it.
Yeah, we're out of time.
Am I going to get to sing?
You and that song carved up the last segment of this hour.
Fine, am I going to get to sing?
Sing what?
The Age of a...
Gotta sing about Age of Aquarius.
Okay, yes, you can sing Age of Aquarius. We'll be back, world famous Phil Henry Show.
Plus, you had Jay Santos on mic instead of on the phone.
I know, I butchered it.
On account of you.
No, you.
No, you.
I gotta get going. I can't take it.
Phil Henry.
Famous Phil Henry Show, so Margaret Gray now.
This is when I was... All right, here we go. Ready? When I was on stage. When the moon... Wait. Back up, please. Back up.
I thought you guys had this together.
You did!
Back off of me, will you? I want to do a little setup. Is that all right?
Go ahead, Margaret. Let's not drag this out.
Oh, well, I don't want to drag it.
I mean, what I'm saying is just get into it. All right, this is just to kind of follow up on the whole doomsday thing. The Mayan calendar is a calendar that did not predict the end of time. It was a calendar that ended at a certain date, today or whenever the hell it was, and is an epic in the Mayan calendar.
Yes, exactly, Phil. In other words, commencing tomorrow or the day after, they're not really clear on exactly the day, but we're in the ballpark. And it's very interesting, isn't it, how the Mayan calendars, as well as Western calendars, all reflect this winter solstice, or this dividing line between the seasons, that being this solstice time, or this time of late December. Now, this, as Jung would tell us, is man and his symbol. The fact that we have a shared racial mind... And,
all right, can we just...
I'm sorry. So, in any event, this is in tribute to the Mayan epic.
What's a new epic called?
Well, the new epic... Are you talking about...
I'm talking about the new Mayan.
Yeah, what is this new Mayan? So we're ending one Mayan epic, which I don't know the name of, and we're entering into... I know that you're going to sing the Age of Aquarius.
Yes, it's the dawning of the Age of Aquarius. I don't know what the Mayans call it. Does it matter?
Well, yeah. I mean, we call ours the Age of Aquarius. This is astrology, though.
Well, yes, it's astrology, but it is the Age of a. Well, yes, it's the Age of Aquarius. In other words, the Mayans have theirs. We've got ours. This is it.
The Age of Aquarius. Most people don't even think of the Age of Aquarius.
Good for them. I don't know what you want me to say, but here it is.
All right, here is Margaret Gray with Age of Aquarius.
And I was on stage at the Aquarius Theater in Los Angeles back in the late 60s when Hair was being produced and presented. And we were on the stage and we all had on just paint. We were naked and we were just flowing. I remember I was one of the bodies on stage. And then I came out and I took center stage in front of the ensemble and I began to sing... The Age of Aquarius. When the moon is in the seventh house and Jupiter aligns with Mars, then hold on, will you? For God's sake, hold on!
What?
I can't get... What are you doing, bud?
I'm not doing anything. I'm playing a song.
What's wrong?
Well, the thing is not... He's not doing it right. There's something wrong with it. The blue stuff over the lyrics...
Yeah, when the blue stuff goes on a lyric, that's when you do it.
But what's that blue there?
That's a countdown. What do you mean, what the blue stuff? That's a countdown chart. And then when the blue goes over the lyric, that's the lyric you sing.
Well, it's making me sing like I've... It's making me sing like I've got a rat stuck up my...
But?
How dare you...
Wait a minute! Ow! Ah, yeah! Oh, yeah! Oh, yeah!
Feels good, doesn't it?
Whoa!
Margaret, I wish you wouldn't do that, okay?
Somebody's got to teach these guys. All right, ready. One, two... When the moon is in the seventh house and Jupiter aligns with Mars, then peace will guide the planets and love will steer the stars.
Go!
This is the dawning of the age of Aquarius.
So that was the ensemble behind me, 2, 3, and 2. And meanwhile, I'm doing a spin, a full layout. And I'm just twirling. I'm doing like a Sonja Henie twirl throughout the stage.
Uh-huh. What's Sonja Henie?
What's Sonja... Stop. What did you just ask me?
What's Sonja Henie?
Yeah, what is that?
What is Sonja Henie? That's a woman.
I'm sorry. Who is she?
She was a figure skater. Very renowned for her... the spinning that she did.
So you were spinning around on the stage?
Phil, the way you put it, it sounds as if I'm in a mental ward.
Well, yeah.
So, in other words, I'm spinning around on a stage with a bunch of naked people, and you think I might as well just be in a mental ward painting the wall with my own feces. Is that it?
Margaret, I didn't say anything of the sort. I don't know the context.
The context is the age of Aquarius.
I'm sorry, but when you say you're spinning around on the stage...
I'm spinning. I'm interpreting the song, Phil.
Yeah, I understand you, Miss Gray. I don't know it's so tough for you guys to get it.
Yeah, well, you'd see she's spinning around like she's in the middle of a mental ward, painting the wall with her feces.
I don't like the way you say that. You do.
Come on, watch it. All right, let's try this again, shall we?
Oh, yeah, sure. So now you've gotten your big laugh.
No, I want to see, you know, how this goes. I'm just...
House and Jupiter aligns with Mars, then peace will guide the planets, and love will steer the storm. It's the end of times.
I'm here.
End of days, y'all.
Get out of here.
What are you doing?
Get out of with the end of days, y'all.
Well, what? That's my... Get Frank Gray.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, okay, so I got to talk to Frank, huh?
That's exact. There's only a certain amount of this crap that I'm going to take.
Margaret, end of days. I thought we were saying that the doomsday thing with the Mayans was the beginning of a new time, a new epic, and you're giving me this end of days.
I'm doing it for the idiots in the audience. Don't you understand?
The idiots in the audience. That's really great, and they're listening right now.
They understand what I'm saying. I get wonderful email from the audience, and I get wonderful tweedlers, or twitters. Bobby's the one that can't pronounce. I know they're called tweets, but I talk so much to Bobby. I get wonderful tweets from my fans who tell me, Margaret, sing more, please, and Margaret, do this and do that, and I get an awful lot of mail from men that want me to. You know, don't say it, bud.
Okay.
Don't you dare say it.
Bud, I can see you wanting to say it. When somebody tells you not to say something, you always want to say it. Don't do it. Because this is... Don't do it, because I'm going to belt you if you do.
I wasn't going to say anything.
Yes, you were. You were going to say that I get mail from men that want me to take my mail.
Oh, well, he's not supposed to say it, but you do.
I whispered it.
It doesn't make any difference. I heard it clearly.
Yeah, I did too.
Really? What did I say?
Take your pants off.
Is my husband on the phone yet?
All right, you know, I can't take this anymore. Would you get this out of here? Great. That sucked.
That sucked. You only wish you could write music like that. One is the loneliest number that they'll ever do.
That don't make no sense.
Yeah, the whole thing is kind of weird. All right,
Oh, hair was weird, huh?
No, hair wasn't weird, but your whole take on this... I understand. Now, I will tell you that it makes sense to me that the Mayan calendar was representative of an epic and it wasn't the end of the world. Shows you... Aren't we embarrassed by these things, or...
No, I think it's fun.
You think it's fun?
Yeah, I think people have fun. I think people enjoy, oh, wow, the world's going to end. Woo!
Yeah, people I know, I was talking to people in my family, they're all like, they had an end of the days party last night.
They did?
My mom did, yeah. I had some of the people over, and they had an end of time and everything.
Well, what were they doing?
Just playing, you know, just watching TV and listening to music.
And they called it an end of times party?
No, but that's what it was.
What? How do you know it was an end of times party?
Because they're all sitting there. Looked like they were dead.
Well, isn't that the way they usually look?
Yeah.
They looked like they were dead.
Yeah, sitting there staring straight ahead, looking at, you know, the game show network. And then they looked at Andy Griffith, too.
And they looked like they were dead, so it was an end of times party, huh?
Yeah.
All right, so that's great. We'll be right back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Let's address very briefly the NRA's solution to the... Well, I said I wasn't going to talk about it.
Yes, you did say you weren't going to talk about it.
So I'm not going to talk about it. But I won't talk about that. We'll just talk about the NRA. All right, we'll be right back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
The truth is your bitch, and you got to talk about the NRA.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, welcome back. Frank Gray joins us. Frank, how you doing?
I'm better than Custer, young man.
Great, great, Frank, and thank you for calling me young man.
You are a young man. You are a young man. You know, it's the whole... Your future's ahead of you, Phil Hendry. I can tell you that right now. Don't let anybody tell you any different, okay? And I know you've got a lot of people that want to put you down and say you're a weird ass. I talk about you, and I tell people... Have you heard Phil Hendry? Because she is the biggest thing that has ever hit the radio.
Thank you very much, sir.
All right.
I wanted to... Margaret is here.
And that was very lovely of you, Frank. I love you.
I love you, too, honey.
All right. Frank, Margaret wants to sing The Age of Aquarius.
Oh, for God's sake.
What is wrong with that?
How many times have I said to you that the song doesn't lend itself to your... I've said to him a million times, Phil, the song doesn't lend itself to his abilities because there's the chorus that comes in with that whole screeching sound that I hate. I hate more than poison. And the one thing...
You never said you didn't like the chorus.
I said it. The one thing that I hate was that one karaoke version that I heard with that the one gal, and he was singing like a... Like, he thought he was Lena Horne. There's only one Lena Horne. Let me tell you something right now. And Margaret understands this. He knows this. I love you, honey. And I think you're a good singer. But you're no Lena Horne.
I understand.
Lena Horne was the greatest singer, performer all around that I've ever heard. And when he took the stage, Phil...
Lena, you know, my father was a big Lena Horne fan.
Well, you know what? Your father had great taste. I know a lot of guys, you know, and if your father liked Lena Horne, then she's my kind of a guy, I'll tell you that, because Lena Horne could sing, and I'll tell you something, she should have come to a concert with me.
Who's that?
Your dad.
Yeah, you guys would have enjoyed it.
Absolutely, because when Lena Horne took the stage, he would belt it out, sweat. I mean, he gave the audience their money's worth. And you talk about a beautiful woman. He was gorgeous.
Well...
Don't laugh. Damn you, don't you laugh.
What's so funny?
Nothing. Margaret wants to sing.
Is he going to sing this Age of Aquarius? Because if he does, I think I'm going to want to pull my own eyeballs out of my skull. Because I'm...
Oh, Frank, don't be so dramatic. I'm cueing it past the chorus.
All right, because when that chorus comes on, and I told you, That's the reason why I didn't put any money into that show. That was one of the few mistakes that I made, Phil. Did I tell you about that?
No.
I had an opportunity when I was in New York. One of the producers came to me, Ratto. Jimmy Ratto. Do you know her?
No, I don't.
Well, she was one of the writers, and anyway, she says to me, hey, look, Frank, we could use a few dollars to get this thing off the ground. And I said to her, what is it? And she laid out, it's a hippie deal. And I said, you got to be kidding. I said, no one's going to go see a bunch of hairy apes running around in their beads and their pieces. And so I said, take your whole aquarium and park it where the rest of your, where, you know. And
boy, you guys don't sound like you parted as friends.
Oh, I like her. She's terrific. And we still communicate. But she'll say, hey, Frank, you remember when you missed the boat on hair? And I'll say, may God send you to the deepest, darkest, hottest hell for even bringing that up.
So you had a chance to...
I had a big chance.
Yeah, Frank has made some very good decisions in his professional life, but that was not one of them, was it, honey?
No, it wasn't, no.
Boy, you had an opportunity to get on the ground floor of hair.
Yeah, well, that's why I despise it to this day. When I hear it, it sounds like a bunch of monkeys jumping around on the stage.
And yet you feel you made a mistake not investing in it.
Oh, I made a huge mistake. I mean, it doesn't take a brain surgeon. I mean, that hair went on to become one of the most successful plays and musicals that the Broadway stage had ever seen. And I'm sitting on the sideline with my thumb and really most of my hand shoved way, way up there. So far up there, you'd think I'm trying to... Well, excuse me.
Frank, why do you do that?
I apologize. I shouldn't have said that, but when I think about it, I want to... It's a crazy thing, and Margaret knows the story, but I came home one day with a big can of lard, and he said... You remember, honey?
Yes, I do. You really want to tell the story?
Well, I have to. And he says to me, what do you got? What is that? Is that a birthday present for me? Ha ha. And I said, well, don't you wish...
All right, Frank, don't get into the private...
I'm sorry. So I said to him, no, I said, I got to thinking as I was driving in the car, I heard the song, One is the Loneliest Number That You'll Ever Do. And he says, yeah. And I said, that's from the musical Hair. And he says, oh, you're starting to think about hair again. I said, yeah, to the point where I went to the store and I got an extra heavy-duty can of lard. And you remember what you said, Margaret?
And I said to him, Frank, you can't keep punishing yourself. And he said, it's all right. You know, I'm going to be a while. And he disappeared into the upstairs bathroom.
Do you understand?
All right. Well, this is not for an audience.
Not for an audience? Where is he? Where is he?
Your wife?
Yeah.
I'm right here.
Okay, well, what do you think about that?
Well, I think that Phil's probably right.
Well, okay, then we won't.
Well, all right. I mean, you went upstairs with a can of lard that you purchased at the store.
No, that I made myself. Yes, that I purchased at a store. And I had been thinking about the musical Hair that I had missed the boat on and investing in it. I would have been... I got a lot of money, Phil. There's no question I have a lot of money. And there's no question that I can't possibly spend all the money I have. But the fact of the matter is, I could have had Merv Griffin money. Do you understand what Merv Griffin money is? That's buying hotels money.
I understand.
I could have purchased hotels. I would have been bigger than Merv Griffin had I simply invested in Hair. But instead, I didn't. So when I heard the song, One is the Loneliest Number That You'll Ever Do, I went to the store, I bought an extra large can of Crisco, you want me to spell it out for you?
Are you telling me you went upstairs and you stuck your hand in this lard?
What was that?
That was me, hitting the table.
Well, excuse me, Little Red Riding Hood, I mean, I thought we're all adults here.
Oh, well, you know what, Frank, there's some stuff we talk about on this show, whether we're adults or not, that's mental. You know?
Listen, I agree. I agree it's mentally deranged, but that's what not investing in Hair did to me. It deranged me to the point where I said, I can't take it any longer. I've got to go get lard, and I've got to ball my fist up, and I've got to do penance. I must do penance.
Frank was raised Catholic, even though he's Jewish.
Frank was raised Catholic, even though he's Jewish.
You got a problem with that?
No, I don't.
That's exactly what happened. My father, my mother was Catholic, my father was Jewish, and my father said, I don't give a sweet Jesus what you do with it. And so he raised me, well, she raised me, and he did too.
Meaning your mother?
Yes, Catholic.
All right, Margaret, go ahead.
Oh, so now you want to hear me sing, because what Frank's doing, my singing pales in comparison.
Just spit it out there, okay, Porky? Spit it out, Helen Keller.
I beg your pardon?
I'm joking.
All right, here it is. Margaret Gray with the continuance of When the Moon's...
Now, really, spell it out here.
I got it, don't worry. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and when the moon is in the seventh house.
Yeah.
And Jupiter aligns with Mars.
Yeah.
Then peace will guide the planets. And love will steer.
Hit it.
I just love it.
All right. Turn it off. Turn it off, for God's sake. Have some mercy on me.
All right. So, was that good?
Was that good? Yeah, that was fun. That's the way I told him to do it. And if you do it like that, honey, you know, you'll never do it any other way.
Thank you. And that's why I love you. And that's why I love having you in my life.
Yeah. So, I got to go home now after hearing that. You know what I have to do? This is why I say, what is the point? What is the point?
Well, there's a half a can downstairs.
Thank you.
Wow. All right, we'll be right back.
What does wow mean?
That was about as sick and twisted a thing as I've ever been involved in. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil, you're not the one buying the lawn. When the moon is in the seventh house.
Phil Hendry.
Mars.
Welcome back, world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We're online every night here with a live-streaming video cast of our show at philhendryshow.com, and a new design of our website, which will feature new members' login, our archives reorganized. What a job. Moving the archives over to the new platform, to the new site, has been a huge, huge endeavor for our friends, very good friends and outstanding people at LEG and Molotov, the guys that are taking over our website. I don't think they knew what was in store for them, you know?
Yeah, they probably never seen no archive as big as that.
Yeah, they probably never seen one as big as the one you got.
Oh, my God.
All right. Take it easy.
Well, it's obvious what they're saying.
Well, if they're right, they're right.
You are disgusting.
I'm kidding. We're talking about the archives. And I don't think they have, Bud, to answer your question. It's been a huge undertaking, but an undertaking nonetheless that will be concluded by, I am given to understand, the end of the year. And then as the new year comes rolling in, as the age of Aquarius is dawning, as the new Mayan calendar rolls out and we'll let some other generation of people worry about doomsday now, 13,000 years down the road or whatever the hell it is.
When did the Mayans make that prediction?
It's a little late for the Mayans now, okay? The Mayans had their day. The Mayans had their day, and they blew it! They blew it!
Yeah, the Mayans blew it, man!
You can't talk that way about an ancient civilization, a beautiful civilization.
Yeah, that sacrificed teenage girls by tearing their hearts out. Now then...
You don't know that that's the case.
We most certainly do know that that's the case. Let's get off our... You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to get off this kick that we've been on for, well, since the dawning of the Age of Aquarius, that ancient civilizations hold some secrets. They don't hold any secrets. They don't hold any. The only reason why we think they hold secrets is because we can't make out half of the gobbledygook they were talking about until we finally bring in about 15 guys from the university, some dude that's conversant in hieroglyphic and Mayan and Incan and your mama too, And they figure it out, and they really, yeah, this is a bunch of jackasses that build a freaking calendar, man. Like for instance, Stonehenge. Let's take Stonehenge, for instance.
What's that?
It's a bunch of rocks in England, okay? It's an amazing antiquity. Don't get me wrong, folks. Don't get me wrong. And I think it's fascinating to look into the lives. To me, history is great because if you can, I would give anything to get in a time machine and just to sit and talk if I could, which I wouldn't be able to.
They spoke English on account of it was England.
Yeah, that wasn't the same thing.
It was not the same language, bud. The English that we know today and the language that the ancient Brits and Celts spoke, it's different. The English that evolved today evolved somewhere around, when the hell, I think they say around the 13th century, am I right about that? Maybe a little earlier. But,
What are you talking about?
I mean, the English we speak today, we would barely be understood by the people in the, say, the 14th or 15th century, barely 14th or 15th century. Before that, it was an ever-evolving language. Now, one of the kicks that we ought to get off around here is this whole thing about how, ooh, Atlantis and the ancient people were so, they were wise for their day, but the Mayans compared to us, they couldn't find their ass with both hands, which is the title of my new book on Mayan history. The Mayans compared to us couldn't find their ass with both hands.
I think it's wonderful.
Yay!
I really do.
Thank you. No, but in all honesty, we got this idea that, oh, they know. They don't know anything. They know far less than what we knew.
But, I mean, what about the pyramids?
What about the pyramids? So what? So they wasted man hours, enslaved thousands, wasted God knows how many thousands and millions of man hours building some stupid-ass tomb.
But it was, it had the, the rising sun.
So what? So they knew when the sun rose. So they sat on their ass, and they figured out what part of the horizon the sun rose and what time of year. They were beginning to develop the calendar. They were beginning to develop a knowledge of the calendar. Now, I'm not saying, and this is where people get me wrong, that we're a superior. The things we know today, we learned from our ancestors. We wouldn't be here today were it not for the mistakes and the achievements of the people that came before us. There is no questioning that. We can't look arrogantly back at the past and say, oh, aren't we so much cooler? Because we're not. We're not. They were the ones that paved the way for us. But there's no secrets hidden in the ancient past that, ooh, if we figure it out, we have eternal life. Or if we figure it out, our skin won't break out. Or,
but if you figure it out, there won't be no male pattern baldness.
Okay.
Good one, bud.
Yeah. Well, maybe. I don't know.
Do they have any bald people back then? Because if you look, they don't have bald people at all.
There's no bald people, what, carved into the sides of the hieroglyphics and all that jazz?
Not the hieroglyphics, you gloid. I'm sorry.
Don't use that word.
Well, you were talking about autistic people before the show started.
I wasn't talking about them in a disparaging manner that way.
Yeah, you were. You were saying that one guy.
There's some autistic people that are autistic that do not function in spheres of life that in other spheres of life they do. For instance, online, on the internet. There are autistic people that are on the internet that you would talk to and you'd swear they have their marbles and their wits about them because they can converse, they can socialize, they can function in a limited social environment. That is the environment of the internet. You can't see them and, you know, you can't hear them. The only thing that you know of them is what they write down in the letters and the numerals that they use in communicating to you. But you don't get any sense of what they look like, nothing like that. And that is, for some autistic people, a limited environment that they can work in. And maybe even in a limited way, just using voice like on telephones or radio or something like that. But to actually go into the world and interact with human beings, they have a very, very limited ability to do that, if they have an ability at all. Now, that's the thing about that particular affliction that can confuse us. You know, we may feel extremely compassionate toward people with autism, and yet at the same time, they're capable of being complete and utter anuses when they're online, you know.
I'm glad you used the word anus and not...
Yeah, not the word...
Shut up. All right, so getting back to what I was getting back to, this jazz about how, ooh, it's an ancient civilization and they must have some secrets. No, they don't have any secrets. They don't have any secrets. They only know what they know. And what they know was the limited thing that we knew in those days. I should say we. I shouldn't say them, because that would make us, it would invest us. Because as people living in this time, we're not invested in the past. We think it was us and we think it was them. It's not us and them. That's who we were. We're looking at our own lives. Would you say about yourself, when you were a four-year-old, would you say him or would you say me when I was four?
I wouldn't say you.
You know what I'm saying, bud. Don't get me pissed off.
No, I know what you mean. Yes.
Yeah, I'd say me.
Exactly. We would say when I was four, when I was five, when I was 10, when I was 15. The human race, as individuals, that's how we relate. We see our lives as this linear path leading to now. And that, all of it, is us. When I was an 18-year-old, when I was a 20-year-old, who I am today. We do not see ourselves as members of the human race the same way, and we should, because if we did, we'd have a far better perspective on history, a far better perspective of ourselves. History would become far more interesting, because suddenly, you know, it's our life. Everybody, people say they don't like history. And as I've often said, do you know the history of your own life? Yes. Well, then you like history.
Well, that's not really history, is it?
Yes, it's history. Why isn't it history?
Yeah, but it's not going to be in no book.
It's not written down in a history book.
So what? It's history. It's history. It's the history of your life. It is an absolute, it is a succession of events significant. You will never know. Somebody may find the history of your life 200 years from now, and somebody say, wow, this is a very significant thing that happened. Here is someone that did this, and that coincides with this, and now we have a bigger picture of what the people were like at that time. You don't know. So the history of your life is important, and people know that because we keep track of our lives. There's nothing that we find more interesting than our own lives. There is nothing more interesting to the human race than themselves as individuals. We love our names, we love ourselves, we love where we live, we love what we wear, we love, you know, everything about us is the most important thing that ever has been, and that is a blessing and it's a curse, because we can't get out of our own heads. We can't see ourselves as part of a larger history. So if we saw, well, us. So let's take a look at the human race as if we're seeing the human race not as them, but as us. So when we were way back then in the Mayan period, all we knew how to do was make pyramids, chart out where the sun was in the sky, and hope that the gods wouldn't get pissed off, so we'd sacrifice a virgin every now and again.
Man, we were stupid.
No, we weren't stupid. We were young. We were young. We didn't know as much as we do now. And we sure as hell didn't have some secret to the universe.
Yeah, if we did, man, we'd probably would have kept it.
Well, I don't know, but no. If we did, if we had a secret to the universe back during the Mayan time, then we would have known it by now. We would have used it by now, and I guess we'd all be immortal or whatever the hell. So no, that wasn't the case. And the Egyptians, the same damn thing. And Atlantis, which never existed, so forget it.
Well, you have a theory on Atlantis, which I think is very interesting.
Well, my theory of Atlantis is that Atlantis is not something that used to exist. Atlantis is a fable about what will be.
But what are you talking about? That's crazy talk.
Yeah, that's crazy talk, man.
Stop with that crazy talk.
Will you shut up?
Well, you think that Atlantis is America.
Well, no, well, okay.
You think that that's what awaits America.
No, I don't necessarily. I'm saying that if there was a country in the world that represents what people say Atlantis represented, it's America. What are you talking about? What the hell? What culture existed before this one that was all so fantastic that people are writing songs about it? There wasn't any Atlantis culture.
Well, Phil, there are some archaeological finds.
There are archaeological finds of ancient civilizations that weren't anything greater than maybe the Egyptians or something like that. There ain't no thing.
Well, I think you're that's crazy talk.
Yeah, thanks very much there, Walter Brennan. All right, we'll be right back with more here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, including the NRA solution, which was to put cops in every school And that's great, except I thought we're in a recession, and I thought people don't like taxes, and I thought, you know what I mean? We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Way down below the ocean.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Well, what's the problem?
The problem is that iTunes has, iTunes, with all due respect, I hate your living guts. I really do. It's one thing to have, it's one thing to have a great iPhone. It, you know, it's an appliance. It's a platform. It's something I like to use, but I would like to have a couple of options. And frankly, now I'm getting tired that I've not availed myself. I'm going to start downloading off of, you know what? I'm using Amazon from now on.
Yay!
Why are you applauding?
That's a smart Amazon, way better for download.
Yeah, I think so too.
I'm going to do it.
Well, I use iTunes. What's wrong with iTunes?
iTunes, they're like Facebook. They're always making improvements, and about half of them are not improvements. Half of them take you back in time to a point where, and I understand that there's all kinds of dorks and geeks that, oh no, you don't understand. See, if you use, that's wonderful. I'm glad that in your universe, all this weird-ass crap makes sense, because to the real people, see, all the real people...
You're doing the Jack Nicholson again, aren't you?
Yeah, from the cuckoo nest.
From One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, yes. To all of us real people, that stuff doesn't make... it ain't making it. We don't have all the time that some of these people have got to sit on their ass and figure out everything that the internet has to offer and the marvelousness of the this and the that and something else, okay? We have lives. We go out. We meet. We greet. There's something other than the freaking computer. And so when I come back to the thing, I needed to do what I needed to do when I needed to do it, and I don't want to get any lip from it. Otherwise, I'm going to put my fist right through it.
Man, that'd be something, man. You beat up your computer.
They put you away for sure.
Maybe.
Maybe that's something you need.
Maybe I do need it. Maybe I do need to be locked up. Maybe somebody ought to sign the papers on me. It would probably be good. It'd be good for a lot of people. But I was looking for Atlantis. I can't find it.
Well, the song by Donovan, everyone knows, is a way down below the ocean way.
What does that mean?
Atlantis was a civilization that was an ancient civilization, according to the horse dung that people have been spewing about it, that existed way back when. And, they were just all this and a bag of freaking pork rinds. And they knew how to do this, they knew how to do that, and they had spaceships, and,
They had spaceships?
They didn't have space. They had mariners.
Meaning they had guys that could sail boats.
Yes, why do you put that in such a derisive way?
Well, big deal, so they knew how to sail boats. Who doesn't know how to do that?
Phil, Atlantis was a highly developed culture. They had poetry. They had literature.
America has poetry and literature. The world today has poetry and literature. So?
They didn't wear... In other words, they devoted their time strictly to the improvement of the mind. They didn't run around with spears and... I don't know. I mean, we could talk to people that know about it.
Well, you know, we could get Dr. Turner on if you want.
Yeah, I'll get Dr. Ron Turner on. He know about it.
All right, we'll get Dr. Turner on for the next segment. But the point that I'm making here is, everything you just said there, we do here.
No, we... In America?
Yes.
No, we don't.
We have environments in America where all you can do, all you have to do is walk around wearing a freaking caftan and reading poetry and staring at the moon.
Are you crazy?
No, I'm not crazy. In our country... You can do anything you want to do. There are liberal arts colleges. There are colonies of people. There's all kinds of stuff where people just stroll the grounds and smell the squirrel crap or whatever they do.
See, are you happy now? He's laughing.
He ought to laugh. And there are places where you can go where you can learn martial arts. And there's places where you can go and be a militarist. And there's places where you can go and be a poet. And there's places where you can go and be an engineer. And there's places where you can go to be anything you want to be. So we're far superior in that sense than we were back then during the Atlantis days, if Atlantis ever existed, which I don't think it did.
So what about this thing about predict the future?
I just think that it does. I think it is. I think it's a prediction of the future. I think what they're saying is, I think it was a dream. That, you know what they say about fables? They say this. They say that fables and myths, like, for instance, the... Ulysses, you know, the Iliad and the Odyssey. These are dreams that mankind has. These are not things that actually happen. They are dreams that the human race has, and we express them in the mythology. And I think Atlantis was one of those dreams. I don't think it was about the past. I think, in point of fact, it was a dream of the future, that there would be a society, a highly advanced world, and the fear was that it would destroy itself, that it would go away. And, of course, that's our fear today, that we will lose what we have, that we value what we have and we'll lose it.
Well, you're running an awfully long way to catch that pass, my friend.
Yeah, Mr. Henry, that's a logical leap. The leap.
Yeah, I mean, Phil, let's ask you this. I'm running a long way to catch that pass, huh?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You cut off the route and decided to go for the post on that one.
Oh, well, get a load of the football fan.
Yeah, when you learn that stuff?
My husband Frank has filled me in.
Yeah, I'll bet he's filled you. I didn't mean that a second. Ow! Yes, sir! Right on the left one. That's 2 days running.
Thank you.
We're going to have to knock that off because I'm going to get phone calls from people saying that we're...
Well, that's your cross to bear, not mine.
No, excuse me. Yes, Robert.
I was just going to say, you saying that America is a country... I forget what you said.
I forget what I said, too. All right, next hour, we're going to have on Dr. Ron Tarner, who can fill us in a little bit on the Atlantis and on the advances of ancient civilizations. And he's an astronomer. He's not a historian. But Dr. Tarner is an astronomer who also has used acid. I'm joking. I'm kidding around.
Yeah, I was going to say.
No, he's an astronomer who also dabbles in the astrology and some of the myths and some of the legends of the past having to do with stargazing. Because, you know, that's one thing that the human species has done since the beginning. We look at the stars and we try to figure out, now, what the hell, is there a message there? Now, of course, today we don't. No, it's just stars.
You don't think that astrology has any merit?
Of course not. Of course not.
My God, what arrogance you have. An ancient belief system.
Margaret, I believe that anything that you can have faith in and motivates you, I think, is good, if it motivates you for the good. So you can believe that there's a lion or a crab up in the sky.
What? There's a crab down in your shorts?
I'll kill it, so help me God. I swear this blood oath, I'll kill it.
Wait a minute.
Hold on. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show. Ron Tarner, next hour.
So, can I get a little bit of warm milk? I'd like a little bit of warm milk, please, in a saucer.
For your cat?
No, for me.
Phil Henry.
Welcome to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this here show. I'm having just a difficult time here trying to get that sized, if you'll pardon the expression, sized.
Well, you should just get rid of that.
Well, what we have on our homepage, you'll notice, is a coupon. And it's just a bit of nostalgia. You know, there's a throwback Thursday, there's a flashback Friday, all this fun stuff, and... we've got a terrific bunch of guys that work with us now in our social media. And John says to me, John Mason said, Phil, have you got any pictures for flashback, Friday or throwback Thursday? I said, well, and occasionally I'll send him, I think I sent him a picture of myself.
That Little League picture's pretty funny.
I sent a picture of myself at Little League. There's a little picture of me there with my mates in our Little League uniforms. And then I had one of myself, which is kind of a funny picture, and I now know why the adults, sometimes adults will just let a kid make a jackass out of himself. It's a picture of me with my kid sister and my flies wide open,
Well, but it's adorable. I've seen that picture.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it's adorable, but were it me at that time in my life, I would have said, well, my fly's open. Let me zip, you know, somebody, but they probably thought it was funny, you know. In this particular throwback picture that we have on our homepage here, it's a 50% off any steak combo Ted's of Beverly Hills coupon. And this was a pretty funny thing. I thought it was fun. It was a Ted's of Beverly Hills coupon that we gave out during a broadcast of our show from the Museum of Television and Radio in Beverly Hills. And I think this is like a 10-year-old event or something, maybe a little bit more recent than that. And what was funny is the late, great Sam, who was our security guy, he took this thing with one of his, him and Sam and Ray, and they said, or Doc, Sam and Doc.
You thought of Sam and Ray because they were singers?
I thought of Sam and Ray, the singers. Yeah, no, it was Sam and Doc, and they took this and they went to the address. Because these guys, as well as they knew me, I guess they didn't put two and two together.
It was Nate and Al's, right?
Yeah, it's Nate and Al's. Nate and Al's is a very famous delicatessen in Beverly Hills. It's across the street, I think, from the Museum of Television and Radio. So, long story short, they show up with this Ted's of Beverly Hills coupon thinking they're going to get half off of a steak combo, and they're like, they don't even know from, what the hell is this, Ted's of Beverly? So, anyway.
Well, where is Ted's?
You'll never know. All right, Dr. Ron Tarner is going to join us on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL, and, of course, online at philhendryshow.com. Dr. Tarner at the Mountain Meadow Observatory in Cloverdale, Colorado. And, Dr. Tarner, it's good to speak with you. How are you?
Hey, Phil, how are you doing?
Good, good. And how is your son?
Oh, well, thank you very much, Phil. He's doing very well.
And the family is... Where do you spend Christmas?
Well, we're going to have Christmas at Jared's grandparents' house, which is my mother and father. We'll be in Denver for that. He's going to spend time with his mother in Denver as well. So it's going to be an action-packed, I can assure you, a holiday.
Well, good for you guys. We want to talk to you about the astronomical or scientific implications involved in ancient civilization. We're not going to talk about Mayan doomsday because that's over. But I got to talking last hour about the...
You don't want to talk about the Mayan doomsday at all.
Unless you have something to add.
Well, the only thing that I have to add, Phil, is what a lot of people have said, that you said, which was the Mayans, the only doom that they predicted was their own. And then the other comment that I wanted to make about the doomsday predictions of the Mayans was that doomsday falls for us every day. And so the Mayans, in their own way, were not half wrong at all. The Mayans were absolutely right. Today was doomsday for some people. And if you think of it in that context, if someone was poo-pooing the doomsday, let's say, or the concept of Mayan doomsday, and their life came to an end today, or if you will, yesterday, I guess today is the... 22nd, is it?
Yes. I think today's the 22nd, yeah.
Well, let me double check.
Well, I think it all it takes is a little bit look on the calendar. You can see what day it is.
What day is it, bud?
Just checking now.
Stand by.
It's the 22nd, Phil. I just looked at my watch.
Okay, it's the 22nd.
Stand by.
No, not stand by. We got the date.
I have the date already, bud. It's the 22nd of December.
That's correct, yeah.
All right, he has verified it.
Thank you.
Boy, you either have a very cracked staff, Phil, or you've got a very cracked staff. A cracked staff.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so don't shake your head, okay?
Is she shaking her head? I can see her sitting there going, like, boy, that was rotten.
Well, it was rotten, Rod. I'm sorry.
All right, well, Margaret, the next time they pull you out of bed and get you on a microphone and have you perform on a radio show with about a five-minute notice, you let me know.
I'm sorry, Ron, if it's inconvenient.
No, no, it's fine. It's fine. I just I tried to get off a cutie, and everyone let it lie there and bleed to death. You know, jokes are like sick people, Phil. You can help them, or you can let it lie there and bleed to death. And that's what you people did to that.
It wasn't much of a joke, Ron. It wasn't much of a joke, and I know that you have a sensitivity to that, given the fact that Stephen Hawking, who you have a long-standing feud with, wins a lot of these joke competitions.
Well, there's not a lot of these joke competitions. What we have here at Mount Meadow and some of the other some of the other scientific installations and institutions, as well as the universities, we have a an annual joke festival, if you will. And these are jokes and routines that are sent in by members of the scientific community from around the country. Hawking generally wins because he has become adept at writing these Polish jokes, which I find racist.
Can you tell any of them?
No, I don't want to hear any if they're racist.
No, Phil's right. I will not tell any of them. They're the typical jokes, you know. How many does it take to screw in a light bulb? And I don't find them funny at all, but he wins constantly. And so if there's a sensitivity I have at all to jokes, it's that the joke competition that we have as scientists, Hawking continually hijacks with his cheap, dirty little jokes. And that's what I resent.
All right, let's not talk about that, if you don't mind.
I appreciate that, yeah.
But you're saying that Stephen Hawking writes Polish jokes?
Yes, virulently, violently anti-Polish. You say he has, if I could just say this one thing, Phil.
Go ahead, then I really do want to move on.
If you look at Stephen Hawking's, stationery, and he sends out things on his own stationery because he still uses snail mail, or sometimes he has in his faxes, or his email, I should say, the Stephen Hawking insignia, which is a picture of John Cassavetes in the film Dirty Dozen saying, you slob, you slob.
What is that?
Is that the Dirty Dozen?
That's what I just said. I don't stutter.
All right. I understand that, Ron. I'm just trying to get... And he has a picture of Cassavetes.
Yes, he's got a picture of John Cassavetes. This is the Stephen Hawking stationery. You understand what I'm talking about?
Yes, I understand.
All right. And in the stationery that he has... He has a picture of John Cassavetes, and underneath it, it says, you slob, you slob.
You slob, you slob, which is a scene in Dirty Dozen where John Cassavetes is caught trying to break out of this compound by Charles Bronson and Jim Brown, and they won't let him do it because he's going to screw it up for the rest of them. And he looks at Bronson, who is, his character is Slavic. He says, you slob, you slob.
All right, and then what?
And then Bronson and Brown beat the crap out of John Cassavetes and drag him back into the barracks, and that's the end of that.
Yeah.
But Stephen Hawking with a picture of John Cassavetes yelling, you slob, you slob.
Yeah, that's his feeling about Polish. Polacks. Not Polacks, but Polish.
God.
All right, anyway, let's get to our discussion now of Mayan civilization.
I mean, I want to. I hope I haven't put anybody off.
Well, you've put me off to Stephen Hawking.
I have not been put off to Stephen Hawking, by the way. I'd like to, if you don't mind, judge for myself.
Well, what do you think you're going to do, Phil? Sit down and have a drink with him sometime? Jesus.
Yeah, I think I'd like to just judge for myself. All right, folks, Dr. Ron Tarner is with us. When we come back, we will talk about the scientific achievements, the other achievements and developments of ancient civilization. And is there anything to this idea that ancient civilizations had any kind of view into the future, into the life sciences that the rest of us did not? We'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. On the and tell Ron we'll be with him in just a minute, if you don't mind. On our homepage, you will see a picture of yours truly, Phil Hendry, with a very great man. I call him a very great man because he is, Dr. Hamlin Emery. And Dr. Emery is my doctor. He's also a brilliant guy in that he was... one of the first people to begin testing. I'm going to have to remove this from the side. I'm going to tell you something right now. This is pissing me off.
Phil, you are on the air. Quit fooling with it.
Yes, mother. I was trying to get a picture there of I'll get it up. Excuse me. I didn't mean to say I'll get it up. I'll get the picture up there.
You'll get it up.
Yeah. Anyway, he's a great guy, and I'll tell you more about him when we have some more time. But right now, I don't want to waste the time of my guest here, Dr. Ron Tarner, on the line with us. Dr. Tarner, welcome back. So enough about Stephen Hawking and his Polish jokes. We want to discuss the Mayans and other civilizations. Is there a civilization anywhere that you would consider to be superior one in the past that had it all over modern society?
Well, no, I don't think in the context of what we have to deal with in modern society. I will say one thing, though, Phil, that I was reading some comments on social media last night, and as will often happen, some individual will get on there and begin to pontificate about something that he knows nothing about. In this case, the individual was saying that the Mayans had not yet figured out the Bronze Age, as opposed to the Europeans who had. And again, missing the point entirely, the Mayans did not figure out certain sciences because they didn't need to. Human development and human invention is based upon need. If the Mayans had no need to develop weapons with which to wage effective war, then they did not need to develop those weapons because they didn't live in that environment. The Europeans lived in an extremely warring environment. There were wars constantly for the resource-rich areas of Europe, whether they were the forests, the rivers, the mineral resources, and so forth. Though the Europeans developed very quickly bureaucracies, militaries, and consequently war. For the Mayans, that was not the case, and a lot of that has to do with the geography. The Mayans lived in an area that was difficult to get to because of the north-south orientation or axis of the continent they were on. The Europeans, on the other hand, had a great many travelers from the east visiting them, and yes, at times, attacking armies. So to say that the Spaniards were able to conquer the Mayans because the Mayans had figured out something is racist. The Mayans would have figured it out had they had the need to.
Well, all right, but let's put it this way.
You understand, I will not abide any racist...
I'm not going to say anything racist.
All right.
I'm just saying when the need did arise, it was too late.
Well, yes. I mean, if you want, the Mayans were defeated in a sort of a blitzkrieg by the Spanish with an array of weaponry, an arsenal of weaponry that the Mayans had not even conceived of because, again, they didn't need that. Now, unlike the victims, let's say, of the Nazi blitzkrieg, the Polish, the Mayans didn't have allies that could come to their aid and say, oh, we know what that is. We have ships like that. We have ordnance like that. We have weapons like that. We will give them to you. The Mayans were on their own. And the only other civilizations nearby certainly had as much, but not more, than the Mayans in terms of development. So it always seems to gall me when I hear people talking about these societies being inherently or racially inferior. No, that wasn't the case at all.
All right, I understand that. Now, what about the idea that the Mayans had, or any civilization for that matter, had some secret of life?
Absolute poppycock.
All right, so, the immortality.
No, that's all romantic horse dung based on our long-standing love affair, the human race's love affair with mystery, with culture, and with the exotic. And modern man becomes obsessed with this kind of thing because our lives are mechanical, very well controlled. We have solutions for a great many problems. In other words, boring. Even though God knows we have reason not to be bored, we have a great many things happening all the time in our world that are very... that if we thought about it, we'd be scared.
Like what?
Well, just the state of the world as it exists today politically. Forget about whether there's global warming or just the state of the world, the state of our own country, the things that we're dealing with now.
So, Ron, the Atlantis. Let's talk about Atlantis.
Well, I agree with you. There was no such thing as Atlantis. It never existed. I don't know about it being a predictor of the future. I think that you're right that Atlantis was a mythic creation. That meant something to the people that created it originally. It might have been a legend created by a people of ancient Europe to explain the creation of the world. Today, it has no meaning and has no bearing whatsoever on modern man.
Oh, well, all right. So if you say that Atlantis has no bearing on modern man, then the idea that some people use it as a... They believe it's a society that existed...
Well, there you go. That's the human race once again saying that some other people had it more perfect. Some other race understands where we don't. Some other race is in control or has the answer. And if we seek their counsel, we'll have the answer. This is the very childish aspect of the human race that I call, as a matter of fact, I can't do it justice. Bernard Dozier, who's also an educator that you've spoken to, has what he calls, and you've heard it, he needs his mama.
Vernon Dozier, he needs his wife. I've heard Vernon say that.
Vernon, not Dernan. Did he say Dernan?
Yeah, you said Dernan.
His name's Vernon, Phil.
I know that.
Yeah, but you said Dernan.
Vernon.
All right, well, he's got what he calls I need my mama.
Vernon will say that about people, that they need their mama. What's the...
Well, don't get upset about it, Phil.
He's trying to explain something, Phil. Why are you getting...
Well, here's the thing. We were having a very nice discussion, and all of a sudden you are falling back on he needs his mama. Isn't there something...
What do you mean falling back on? I think that's a very well-developed thought.
Mr. Dozier's on line two if you want to talk to him.
Who?
Mr. Dozier on line two if you want to talk to him.
All right, Vernon Dozier is on the... Did you call him up?
He called in.
Vernon.
Yeah, Phil. And how you doing, Ron?
I'm good. I'm talking to your friend, Mr. Henry.
Yeah, Phil, he needs his mama is simply a way of articulating clearly the human race is, and the American people in particular, are at a place where we are so disbelieving of the actual evil of the world and so disbelieving of our own capabilities that we decide there's got to be someone bigger and better who can explain it all to us, either the people of Atlantis or some government conspiracy. Or somebody has control, and that's why I call it the way we're thinking. We gotta go find mama, you know.
Yeah, I understand when you talked about mama.
Yeah, but no, see, and I think, you know, Ron, I love you and I respect you, but I don't even think you get the emotional impact of this.
I thought it was a very well said.
I know, but when I think of mama, I think of my own mother who used to kiss me on the lips.
Now you told me about that.
Well, is that that's emotional for you?
Yes, I think it would be emotional if, as a boy, the last thing your mother did before she dropped you off at school where all your friends could see you is kiss you on the mouth.
That is disgusting, and that's abusive.
Yeah, but it wasn't abuse. Don't call it that, because I love my mother. It was embarrassing.
Well, I think it's more... I think it's abuse.
I think it's embarrassing.
I think it's abuse, too.
I think it's embarrassing.
I think it's embarrassing, too. Not necessarily abuse.
Yeah, I think it's embarrassing and abuse.
Thank you. So the human race and the American people, when they say, oh, well, the government did this, and there isn't real evil, it's just the government, and there isn't real this, and there isn't real that, it's just the government. See, these are people that have too much faith in mommy. You see?
Well, now I see what you're saying, Phil. There's a little bit of sarcasm there.
There ought to be sarcasm.
Well, when you said he needs his baba as a theorem, I agreed with that, but I didn't know that...
There's a lot of emotional sarcasm involved there. That's why I don't buy this as this some kind of a...
Well, I'm here to tell you, yes, it is some kind of a... Because now we look at Atlantis and Mayans. Can you imagine that? These are people that were naked and had feathers. I'm not saying that they're racially inferior. I'm saying...
Well, I'm trying to get us to look at the history of the human race as a we, not them.
No, I understand that.
All right, hold on. Vernon Dozier and Ron Tarner will be back as we continue our discussion of ancient man, ancient civilizations. Did they really know anything? Did they really have any secrets to divulge? The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Well, I think that the beard is...
Mama!
You see? Yeah, I know, but you're hitting it a little hard. If we go back up the air, you need to back off. You gotta back off of anything.
Phil Henry.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
I just think it's ridiculous.
Margaret, why don't you just let me do what I'm doing?
You're on the air. What are you doing fooling with that?
I was trying to update something. I'm sorry, folks. I'm doing probably too many things at once. Now I'm fine. I just wanted to update something. I mistakenly erased one of the show logs.
The difference is to make. You got to get on the air and perform.
Yeah.
Oh, well, okay. What are you guys, my stage mothers all of a sudden?
God. Well, look at you, and you have a guest hanging on, and you're fooling around with that asinine, and Diane Sawyer is an alcoholic. You understand that, don't you?
Well, isn't that nice? Does that make you feel better to say that about her?
What's going on with you and Diane Sawyer? You got the hots for her or something?
Why do you say something like that?
I'm pointing out something that's very obvious. She's a drunk. A drunk. You want to waste your life with one of those, you go right ahead.
What are you talking about? Her picture's on the blog because that's who we were talking about.
You got a thing for Diane Sawyer. I've heard about it. I believe it. And you want to waste your life with a busted down drunk, go right ahead.
God, Mr. Henry, don't you understand?
You guys are idiots. I got a picture of her on my homepage because we were talking about her on the show the other night with General Galen Shaw and I believe Dean Wheeler. Okay, now let me get back on the line here. I got with me is Ron Tarner and Vernon Dozier, Dr. Ron Tarner and Vernon Dozier, joining us, a couple of educators. And we were talking, Vernon, about the tendency of modern people, modern man, and Ron, to believe in the mystical superiority or perhaps even the technological superiority of older cultures, especially ancient cultures that we don't know a lot about.
That is great, and I think that's a very key point, and I know Ron would back me up on this. When we have a body of literature, a body of evidence or information on a culture that just stops short of us being able to understand them the way we might more contemporary society, we always seem to, as human beings will, we always seem to attribute to them, well, something that we're not finding out, some superior to some superhuman.
To that point, that's what we're talking about Atlantis, Phil. If Atlantis existed, obviously we don't have a lot of information on Atlantis, and so what we supposedly do know, which is all mythology, we take that to mean that there's some underlying amazing power that Atlantis had. Well, if it was such a powerful civilization, I wonder why it's no longer with us.
And I think a lot of people will say, well, it's no longer with us because something devastating, like they had some power that even we don't have, you know, something heavier than a nuclear bomb. And I think that's just the human race going, you know, Atlantis is almost like a historical mama, you know. And I got to tell you, nothing sickens me more, and Ron knows this, because Ron knows my story intimately and doesn't just spill it out at cocktail parties like I'm given to understand some of your people have.
I think it's very sensitive information.
Well, who spilled it out at cocktail parties?
I talked about your mother kissing you on the mouth because you just told me about it.
Yeah, and then you went to some cocktail party, and I don't know who it was, but you were glad-handing with your cocktail. And you notice I don't get invited to these things.
Oh, my God. Phil, it was an industry function, and they said, who was that man? And I said, well, he's a man that...
Yeah, that's not very nice.
Thank you, Phil.
That's not very nice.
Well, I'm sorry.
The point that I'm trying to make is, you know, people can't just stand on their own two feet. They have to suddenly, they can't just accept the reality of life. They've got to suddenly say, well, I got to go ask my daddy. And that's how we view the U.S. government. And that's how we can't accept, for instance, that there's evil. We have to believe there's got to be some government conspiracy. And all we got to do is go ask daddy. And it makes me sick to my stomach.
And I think that, you know, Rod, Doctor, are you doc? Are you a doctor?
No, I'm not. You are.
All right. Well, let me just call you Dr. Dozier. How's it feel?
Feels pretty good. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. And you, Dr. Dozier, I think, need to understand that you're emotional about this because your mother kissed you on the mouth.
Yes, but now that this has been spilled out at a tie at a cocktail party, I don't need...
All right, we don't need to talk about that anymore, do we?
Well, it is significant, Phil, because I have a very strong emotional connection to this topic.
And I think, to sum it up, Phil...
By the way, I don't want to be the bad person. You know, you're letting this just hang in the air as if it's me, as if I'm hanging in the air and someone came along and decided to just tug my pants down a little bit.
I don't understand that at all.
No, neither do I.
I'm saying, yes, I said at the cocktail party that your mother kissed you on the lips. You're letting me twist in the breeze with that, Phil.
All right, so we've dropped it.
But is there an apology?
where is my apology that you were at a cocktail party talking about my mother tongue-kissing me?
Well, I had no idea that's what it was.
I didn't either. I never said anything about tongue.
Well, that's what she did. She slipped a tongue in, too. So, you understand something, Phil, of what we have here.
Well, you're talking about something I'd like you to stop talking about, unless you want to talk to a police officer about it.
My mother's dead. You want them to exhume the body and put it in the prison? Is that what you want?
No, sir, I don't. But I thought if your mother was alive...
And even if she was alive, you want me to take a... She would be now 90-something. You want me to take a 90-year-old old bag and put her in front of a police booking desk and say, this old thing tongue-kissed me. Now take it, stick it in a cage, and then do what you want with it? Is that what you want me to do?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that people need to be accountable.
Well, guess what? She's accountable now. She's accountable now because she's in the ground and she's a good, I don't know, 6-7 years into decomposition. You pull her out of the ground now, and you've got a Vincent Price movie, my friend. Now, how are you going to live with yourself then?
Okay, you made your point. All right.
Well, the point is the woman's locked dead. There's no...
I understand. I'm just saying that that's an abusive thing to do.
Well, I don't think it was abuse so much as it was just she was basically drunk. So I think she forgot that she was kissing. Anyway, the point that I'm trying to make here is that when these people say the U.S. government did it, all they want is, Mama!
Yeah, see the emotion there?
That's very emotional.
Yeah, it's emotional. I'm getting sick and tired of people not taking responsibility for themselves, and all they could do is walk around and say the government did it, or the Mayans, they know, or the Egyptians, they know, and that's because they all want to sit there at the feet of their daddy!
Hello? Okay, his line's got... Ron, are you there?
I'm right here, yeah.
Yeah, you should...
I think we need to lock that man up.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lock him up. Vernon's had a tough life, okay? By and large, he's a good man. He's an educator. And let's not forget those 6 league titles at Belmar Academy.
Oh, let's not forget that. Here we go again with football. You men and your football. If it wasn't for football, we'd be able to lock up half of the war criminals of this world. But they're all out running around because you guys need your football.
Well, what are you trying to say? Is it a football coach is a war criminal? What a stupid... Do you hear that one, Phil?
Well, yeah, I think, Margaret, you know, your point about football being, you know, an obsession, you're right about that. But to say that all football coaches are like Vernon didn't do anything wrong. His mother lip-locked him when he was a kid.
Well, yeah.
So he's not doing anything wrong. He's nuts, a little bit. But he's never abused any kids himself. The only problem with Vernon is he's nuts. You know, and he's a very hard-driving guy, and he's a... And he's a little cuckoo.
What about the fact that he has his wife back the car over his hand?
Oh, wait. I know a little bit about that because Vernon and I have discussed that. Vernon is a part of that movement, Phil, that Dean Wheeler went the man camp.
Man camp.
Yeah. And so...
What is man camp?
This is that movement where guys want to feel empowered and be men again.
Oh, my. Oh, they sit around and bang drums like they're big He-Men.
Margaret, you know what? You just live to
demasculate? Get a load of the gloid.
All right, that does it.
Well,
that... See you later, Ron.
Wait a minute, I didn't do...
You concluded that interview because I called you a gloid.
How many times have I told you not to use that word?
About 6.
Then why are we still using it?
Because you angered me.
Because I misused, because I didn't pronounce the word emasculate properly.
Phil, you weren't pronouncing emasculate. You said demasculate. Like you're one of these people with a third grade education. You're trying to pass yourself off as a doctor. Like you got an honorary doctorate at Howard.
What a racist.
Yeah, I heard that.
I am not a racist.
What'd she say?
She said I'm talking like I got an honorary doctorate at Howard.
What's that?
It's an all-black college, don't you know nothing?
Hey!
Well, just take it easy, you guys. So that's what you're saying, huh?
No, I'm not. That is not racist.
Then why did you specify Howard?
Because you're saying, oh, demasculate.
Yeah, that sounds like something that a black guy would say that doesn't have no education.
I'm gonna kick your... Hey!
Hey!
See what you're doing?
I didn't do anything.
You know what? I'm gonna throw your ass out of here early. I would if it wasn't for the fact that we're coming up on our break. right, thank you, Dr. Ron Tarner and Dr. Vernon Dozier, an honorary doctorate tonight for that discussion, as limited as it was, concerning the advances of ancient civilizations. Well, they didn't have any advances. They couldn't find their ass with both hands, which I think was the name of a book that Ron Tarner had written, right?
No, you said you wrote it.
Oh, that's right. I wrote it. All right. World famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL, and online at philhendryshow.com. This show has hauled ass, man. Now, I want you guys to know that we are gone all next week. We're on vacation. However, the website will be updated daily. Our podcast will be updated daily. And when we can, we will feature on Phil TV in HD some of our classic shows. And also keep in mind that coming up on Monday with Jack Igagdor and Brett Morrison, along with Larry McKinney and Ned Garline, will be the Phil Hendry Football League playoffs. They start at 3:00 on Monday afternoon with the LA at Tampa game, and at 6:00 it's Utah at Portland, and then the Dickman Bowl 1 week from Monday on New Year's Eve, and that will be with Jack Igagdor and Brett Morrison. So that's all on Phil TV in HD and Wang Radio. That's a little update there. And for you folks who do not have backstage passes, because you need a BSP to hear the games and to access all of the thousands of hours of archive material and everything else that we do, if you don't have a BSP, this is the month to get it. This is the month to get your backstage pass, because with it, if you get 1 month of a subscription, you get one free best of CD download. If you get a 6-month subscription, you get three free best of CD downloads. And if you get a 1 year best of subscription, you get five, or you get a 1 year subscription, a BSP, you get five best of CD downloads in our shop. So this is the month to grab a backstage pass at philhendryshow.com. And we'll be right back with the final segment of our show before we take our Christmas vacation and so on and so forth and like that. And Diane Sawyer's mug is finally on the homepage. And no, I ain't got the hots for Diane.
A busted down drunk.
Boy, you really hate her, don't you?
No, but I just know which side of the bread the butter's on. And don't you say it, bud.
Sorry.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
We're getting all that time, man, just to get the homepage updated.
That's Dr. Emery.
That's the very famous Dr. Hamlin Emery. He is a great man on our homepage. Now, let me tell you about this guy, Dr. Hamlin Emery. This is a guy whose work is now well-known internationally, and he's got people, I'm telling you right now, he's got people flying in from Europe to visit him. Here is a guy that, along with Dr. Suffolk, who is his partner, developed a database of EEGs. There are all these EEGs, and the guy, you see the picture there?
Yeah.
That guy, that grinning nut left to the left is me, and you can see, you know, Doc, I think you got some more work to do on Phil Hendry. But he developed a database that is now has now been recognized by universities in this country and elsewhere, that doctors now can access and prescribe antidepressants, things like that, based upon this database of EEGs. Before, they were just guessing. They were just saying, well, I think I'll give the person drug this because they're acting like that. And it was very, very imperfect. And in any event, Dr. Emery's work is now widely hailed. Look him up online. He's a great guy. Now,
this is the man. He's very handsome, isn't he?
Yeah, Dr. Emery is kind of like a bespectacled, highly educated Robert Culp in a way. But he was a Marine Corps doctor in Vietnam, and there's a picture of him with in Vietnam with the children that they were working on at the time. He was a pediatric doctor at the time. And then he went back to the States. He got his education at Johns Hopkins and elsewhere. I think he was at Vanderbilt. And he headed west. And since then, you know, he's had his practice and has developed this line of pharmacology, this philosophy. But the thing about him that's interesting, he's kind of an eccentric guy. And I like the doctor because of that. Like, one time I called him up, and I was on my way to Aspen for the comedy festival. And I said to him, I had to call him up because I needed something. And I call him up, and he answers the phone. Phil, I'm sorry I couldn't hear the phone ringing. I was practicing the German cello. And,
What's that?
It's the German cello. It's a musical instrument.
It's a musical instrument, you...
Take it easy. And so that's what this guy's doing. It's like 8 o'clock in the morning. He's practicing his German cello. He's very heavy into music. He's also a guy that works with, as you might imagine, he works with people who have substance abuse problems. And he's just a great man. Really is a great man. And he's helped a lot of people. And and I'm very proud to say I know him. So if you have a, I would highly recommend you.
Is this a paid political commercial? Because I got to log it if it is.
What a jackass, man.
Why?
What do you mean a paid political commercial?
I mean, I'm sorry, a paid...
No, it ain't paid. I'm saying this out of the good... I'm saying it because I believe it. I ain't getting paid. I'm saying it because I believe it. All right? And that's just where that's at, Jack.
Didn't you say he reminded you of James Joyce?
Well, I saw Doc... The Doc walked in one time. If you can see him, he was wearing his... he's wearing dark round shades... And two-tone shoes. He's very big on two-tone shoes, which I think is pretty cool. Yeah, so he's this cat's, he's definitely got it. He's got it going on. I want to be Dr. Emery, which means I'll have to lose another 30 pounds, shave my face, grow some hair, and what else?
And be an ex-Marine.
And be an ex-Marine. Actually, he was a Navy doctor, but yeah, he was with the Marine Corps. Because I don't think they have Marine doctors, do they?
Yeah, they do. You said there was a picture of them.
I think they're Navy guys. In any event, all right, so thank you very much, Dr. Emery, and thank you all for listening to that little description. Wasn't that just Marvy? Okay, so just to recap, over the extended vacation coming up, we will be updating our website daily. We will have our playoff games in the Phil Hendry Football League, Dickman America, on Monday, and the Dickman Bowl will be happening on New Year's Eve, December 31st, 1 week from Monday. Be advised that the new rollout, the new look, the new design, the new world, the new marvelous world of the Phil Hendry website will be happening by the first of the year. Be advised, as I have told my BSPs, that we have a new Bobby Dooley podcast that is due out, and you're going to enjoy the living hell out of that. I can assure you I will not cop to exactly what the content will be right now. The BSPs know. And the BSPs ain't telling. Like the man said in the movie, Doctor, them that knows isn't saying, and them that isn't saying knows.
What?
Wasn't that Ossie Davis?
Now, I think you got that wrong, man. You got that way wrong.
Well, something like that. Also, a reminder that our one-man show continues in rehearsal. We are looking, as I said, at a tentative rollout in February or March.
Oh, so here we go. Now you're pushing it back.
Wait a second. I said we were hoping for February, but I want to do this right. And in order to roll this thing out right, you know, you got to have it...
Yeah, don't you understand? Got to have rehearsal.
Don't tell me about rehearsal. I was in show business.
All right, well, then you understand, don't you?
Yes, I understand. But I think that when you said February, I automatically thought it meant for sure.
Even though I said we're hopeful.
Yes, because I really... Well, in any event, this is my request. I want you to update me more on the rehearsal, and I insist on being at the next one.
I apologize for that, Margaret. Yes, you should be.
So when is it?
We're going to do two next week, so probably next Thursday and Friday.
Next week during vacation.
God, man, you're on vacation. You'll still go and do a rehearsal. That's hardcore.
Yeah, man, hardcore.
That ain't hardcore. Yeah, we're going to go out and do our rehearsal next Thursday and Friday, so we will tell you where, and we'll send a car for you.
Thank you. I would expect as much.
Yeah. You realize, folks, that we send a car for Margaret every night.
As well you should.
And the car is waiting for you to go home. That's why you getting up to leave, you know, the car ain't here.
And that's something else I wanted to tell you about. I want the car to stay here. Not that I'm going to leave, but I just like the idea of the driver hanging around smoking cigarettes and... never mind.
Yeah, okay. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and Phil Hendry, and we thank the car service, whoever you guys are, for the Margaret Gray car service. And we will see you guys 1 week from Wednesday. We'll be back live. Remember, Lions football on Monday, podcasts daily, The Dickman Bowl, 1 week from Monday. Updates every day on our website. To check out what we're doing, just check out the website, philhendryshow.com. Until then, let that be a lesson to you.
Phil Hendry.